concept of life. You know, I'm, this skin and bones appears so really to be me. So why can't I see who I am?
Because we're conditioned.
Okay.
Is it because our senses are limited?
Yes. Yeah.
So what you only can see certain things like gross material elements. You can't see.
Okay. Well, we talked about that one. Now I'm trying to look at it from a different point of view. So you've said now we're conditioned. Now can you give us?
It's what we're used to. It's what we think is normal.
Okay. Yeah. Yes.
It's hard to understand anything different.
Yes, because this is the sense of... So why are we conditioned? Why are we in this conditioned state? And what does it mean to be conditioned? What do we mean when we say someone's conditioned?
Sense, engaged in sense gratification.
Yeah.
Because you've done the same thing over many lifetimes.
Okay, I want to give you another idea. Let's try and bring in a different concept. Supposing someone is criminal, and rather than having their free life, they have to accept the conditions of a prison. Okay, now let's start to think in terms of conditioned. We have to accept this conditioned existence. We're conditioned. This conditioned state is actually restricting us. We're conditioned to accept that this life is everything. We've accepted the conditions of this material world, that this is it, you know. Just like the prisoner, he sees, you know, this is my life. You know? And these are the screws and they're bad. And we're good. And we're going to break free. And there's so many things, he has so many ideas. But the real condition, why does he want to escape? Because the natural condition is freedom. So now we're in this conditioned existence where we're having to accept the very stringent conditions of material nature. We're having to, although the soul is by nature completely immortal, but now we're having to accept the conditions of birth, old age, and disease, and death. You're not free to do what you want to do. You have to, there are some terms and conditions. I'm just trying to examine the thing from different angles of vision. So you know, if you want to, you know, supposing you buy an insurance policy, you know, it comes with some terms and conditions. It's not just that if everything goes haywire, you know, you've got to get out of jail free, or you can, you know, just, if your car gets spoiled, then you automatically get a replacement. There are some conditions attached to it. So the material world is full of conditions. This body is subject to the conditions. We get given this body on condition that you have to accept birth, old age, disease, and death. And you have to work to maintain this body. And you have to work in such a way, generally, that you even forget completely who you are. So this is the conditioned state of material existence, accepting the conditions of the material world. So I'm just trying to bring in a kind of different understanding, because we can use these expressions that someone's a conditioned soul, but if we have some idea of what we're talking about, now why conditioned? Why are the living entities in this material world conditioned? Why am I a conditioned soul? Instead of being free, I want to be free. So why am I having to accept all these conditions?
Because you've come here from the spiritual world, and the reason why you've come here is because you wanted to enjoy separately from Krishna.
Ah, yes, this is the point. So now, well, why then, if you wanted to enjoy separately from Krishna, if you wanted to enjoy like Krishna, why can't you do that in the spiritual world?
And Krishna, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, mm-hmm. is the enjoyer.
Yeah.
And we are enjoyed.
Yes. So, okay. So let's take an example on that. Supposing someone's living in, or take a paedophile, take a murderer, take you know, a mugger, a fraudster. Those people are not free once they're apprehended. They're not free to live in the society because they create a disturbance for everyone else. So they get put inside a correctional, rehabilitational institution. So similarly, we also, rather than be allowed to just cause a disturbance in the spiritual world, we're put into this place so that we can hopefully figure things out with a little bit of help from some real friends. what's actually going on in our lives and get out. Because the other friends, the so-called friends, they say, you're just unlucky you got caught that time. Yeah, that's why you're out of prison. Yeah. Just like Jarasandha, he attacked Krishna's army, Krishna, 18 times. Was it 17 or 18 times?
18
times. And each time he was completely defeated and arrested and let loose and humiliated. But somehow or other his foolish friends, they kept telling him that, yeah, it was just your bad luck. You didn't do anything wrong, nothing serious. You could have another go. So this is the nature of the material association, is that people tell us, just keep trying, If you don't, first you don't succeed, just keep trying and trying and trying again, and you'll be all right, you'll succeed, you'll be a success. Yeah. But what is the meaning of that success? So it's not very intelligent, because success in the material world means you get, your Maserati and your, mansion. Mm. Yeah. But, it crumbles to dust before your eyes, and your body that is trying to enjoy it is crumbling to dust before your eyes. So this is the so-called success of material existence. So this kind of association of others, materialists, who want to encourage us to remain in this material consciousness of life, this ignorance of life, they're not actually the friends. They're actually encouraging us to stay within a world of ignorance and keep our consciousness in ignorance of who we are and what we are. But the devotees are actually the friends, because they're trying to give us guidance. Well, look, actually, if you go straight, then you can actually get out of the prison. If you agree to follow the laws instead of always plotting how to break the laws and make your own plans, how you're going to exploit the society and everyone in it for your own enjoyment, then actually you can live peacefully in the real world. But you have to actually have the right mentality. Because if you got the wrong mentality, what will happen with the mentality, the automatic follow on from the mentality is, if I'm thinking like this, then I'm going to be feeling and willing and doing like this. And then of course there's another term of conditions within the material world, and another term. So as long as that mentality is there, the wardens of the material world, Durga, the material nature, keeps us in the material world of repeated birth and death. But the devotees are trying to actually help us rectify our consciousness so that we can actually act in such a way so we can become purified of this ignorance and contamination of accepting these material conditions as being our real life and soul, so that we can live back in our home, back in the spiritual world, go back home, back to Godhead. So actually the devotees are the friends. And so this is a very essential science to understand. So when Krishna makes this point, in fact not just this point, that the soul is different from the body, in these verses of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna's making the point from different angles of vision to help us really get the full picture and get the hang of it, how we are different from the body. Any thoughts or comments or questions or...
I just have one question.
Go for it.
You say, obviously, when we the consciousness and everything and how we act, so we don't get karma.
Mm.
Obviously, even, like sometimes you're a devotee, you can fall down.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So what is the position then? If you do fall down, obviously you pick yourself, you keep falling down, picking yourself up, then how does that work? Because obviously, you know, certain, when you're falling down, you're bound to react some karma. And then when you realize again, oh, you know, I've done this wrong, and you start practicing sin again. So how does that sort of...
Yeah, it works in a very nice way, actually. Just like a child learning how to walk.
Mm.
Yeah. Is the child going to be satisfied just to keep on falling over? He's going to try to gradually learn from the mistakes so he doesn't keep falling over.
Mm.
So he becomes strong and able to not just totter and ding, one step after another, but actually be able to run and skip and jump and engage in the real activities of life. So it's definitely some learning, some encouragement is needed, and some practice is needed. And determination, resolute determination that I'm not going to fall over, and that I'm going to carry on, and I'm going to stay fixed in my upright position.
But so then, obviously, the Maya tests you sometimes as you're advancing in devotional services. So Maya will sort of test you so much that with determination, is it possible, you know, obviously you can cross over it, but you need so much determination to do that. And obviously you have to go through some austerities and...
So the learning curve, Srila Rupa Goswami, he recommends that we need a few things. We need to develop a few things. Patience, confidence, determination, eagerness, and enthusiasm. These things we need to develop. Because these things will actually help us progress, as opposed to just, you know, complacency. Okay, well, you know, I'm a Hare Krishna now. So don't have to really try and do anything or advance in my life. But actually that complacence has to be thrown out with that enthusiasm and eagerness. Because even in the material world, unless you've got some enthusiasm, you can't do anything.
Mm.
Yeah. So what to speak of in spiritual life? There has to be enthusiasm. And we have to be eager to actually embrace that position of being fixed up in Krishna's service. And we have to be determined that I'm not going to let these things get me down. And just like you say, the child falls down and pick up, dust yourself off, get back on with it. You know, don't waste any more time, just get on with it. Yeah. And that's one of the beauties of Krishna consciousness, is that if one seriously tries to pick oneself up and carry on in Krishna consciousness, then you just continue from where you left off and learn from the experience. And patience. Because it's not going to happen immediately.
Mm.
It's not going to happen that, okay, now I've been a Hare Krishna for 6 weeks and, you know, I'm going to be a pure devotee next week. You know, it's going to be really good, if only. But we have to have confidence in the process as well, which is why we need to be clearly conscious and aware of what the spiritual science is and how it actually works, and try to apply whatever we have learned so that we can feel confident. And how we do that also is by keeping the association of others who are trying, and also gradually, patiently, carefully, step by step, making progress in the spiritual lives. Because it's not a rugged individualist movement. It's a society. It's an association of devotees where we're all starting to really come to terms with it. Well, actually, everyone's in the same boat as me. You know, so I should be kind to the others and hope that they'll be kind to me, because I need help as much as they need help. I need their help as much as maybe I may be able to help them in one bit here or one bit there, but they may be able to help me in lots of different ways. So together in a society we become strong to be able to progress in our realization, in our appreciation, our determination, our confidence, our eagerness, and our enthusiasm to accept Krishna as the Supreme Person and accept ourselves as being His eternal servants. So, did that answer?
Yeah, that answered. Yeah.
Is it all right?
Thank you. Yeah.
Okay, good. Okay. Any other points, or shall we read a verse? Okay. So this verse, 2:13, very important verse. This verse is the one which I've looked through the verses that Prabhupada lectured on Bhagavad Gita, and this is the one that Prabhupada lectured on time and time and time and time and time again. And he always recommended that, he said, if we can get the hang of this point, then actually we can really make progress. And if we don't get the hang of this point, then we never actually make any progress in spiritual life. You can do so many things, but if you still think I'm the body, then you're not actually making any progress. So let's have a look at this. Let's do the Sanskrit. Do you want to do the Sanskrit, Chaitanya? Yeah. With an Om Namo Bhagavate?
Yeah. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Dehi nosmim yatha dehi.
Dehi nosmim yatha dehi.
Kumaram yovanam jara.
Kumaram yovanam jara.
Tatha dehantaram praptir.
Tatha dehantaram praptir.
Dhirastatra namuyati.
Dhirastatra namuyati. Who knows the Sanskrit of this verse already? You got the hang of it yet, Rilash Prabhu?
I'm getting there.
You're getting there, okay, good. Ashok Prabhu, how about you?
No.
Not yet, okay.
Not yet, no.
Okay.
First time I heard this.
This is the first time you've heard this one? Oh, right, okay, right. Wow. You heard a lot of things, but you haven't heard this verse. Wow. Okay, well, we better do this verse then. Carry on.
Dehi nosmim yatha dehi.
Dehi nosmim yatha dehi.
Kumaram yovanam jara.
Kumaram yovanam jara.
Tatha dehantara praptir.
Tatha dehantara praptir.
Dhirastatra namuyati.
Dhirastatra namuyati.
Dehi nosmim yatha dehi.
Dehi nosmim yatha dehi.
Kumaram yovanam jara.
Kumaram yovanam jara.
Tatha dehantaram praptir.
Tatha dehantaram praptir.
Dhirastatra namuyati.
Dhirastatra namuyati. Okay, I'll have a go. Actually, if you set it to music, you know, music actually makes things sometimes more memorable. You know? So let's, can we try?
Yeah.
Okay. Dehi nosmin yata dehe.
Dehi nosmin yata dehe.
Kumaram yovanam jara.
Kumaram yovanam jara.
Tatha dehantara praptir.
Tatha dehantara praptir.
Dhirastatra namuyati.
Dhirastatra namuyati.
Okay, who's next? You want to have a go, Rich?
Dehinosmin yatha dehe.
Dehinosmin yatha dehe.
Komaram yovanam jara.
Komaram yovanam jara.
Tatha dehantara praptir.
Tatha dehantara praptir.
Dhirastatra namuyati.
Dhirastatra namuyati.
Dehinosmin yatha dehe.
Dehinosmin yatha dehe.
Kumaram yovanam jara.
Kumaram yovanam jara.
Tatha dehantara prapti.
Tatha dehantara prapti.
Dhirastatra namuyati.
Dhirastatra namuyati.
Dehi nosmin yatha dehe.
Dehi nosmin yatha dehe.
Kumaram yovanam jara.
Kumaram yovanam jara.
Tatha dehantara praptir.
Tatha dehantara praptir.
Dhirastatra namahayati.
Dhirastatra namuyati.
Dehinosmin yatha dehe.
Dehinosmin yatha dehe.
Kumaram yovanam jara.
Kumaram yovanam jara.
Tatha dehantara praptir.
Tatha dehantara praptir.
Dhirastatra
Dhirastatramuyati.
Okay, now the first word of this is very significant. I want to break it down in different ways so we can gradually understand how to detach. So deha,
deha,
the body,
the body.
Dehe,
dehe,
in the body,
in the body.
Dehina,
dehina,
of the embodied,
of the embodied.
So you see what's happening. First of all, you've got the body, and you've got someone in the body, and then you've got actually changing the focus. This is of the person who is in the body, right? So this is the difference, because generally, you know, sometimes people think, well, I'm the body and I have a soul. But actually, is it like that?
No.
And what is it?
I'm the soul and I have a body.
Yes, this is the principle. So this is learning to, wait a minute, let's look at things in perspective here. So, dehina,
dehina,
of the embodied,
of the embodied,
ah, right, asmin,
asmin,
in
this,
yata,
yata,
as, dehe,
dehe,
in the body, kumaram,
kumaram,
boyhood,
boyhood,
yovanam,
yovanam,
youth,
youth,
jara,
jara,
old age, tata,
tata,
similarly,
similarly,
deha
antara,
of transference of the body,
of transference of the body,
prapti,
prapti,
achievement,
achievement,
dhira,
dhira,
the sober,
the sober,
tatra,
tatra,
thereupon,
thereupon,
na,
na,
never,
never,
muyati,
muyati,
is deluded,
is deluded.
Ah, so some very important points there. Everyone is deluded, but the dhira is never deluded. So this is where we're coming to. Okay, let's read the translation. As the embodied soul continually passes in this body, I'm just trying to get the idea that this is a real life example. We're all embodied souls and we're continually passing in this body from childhood to youth to old age. Similarly, the soul passes into another body at death. A sober person is not bewildered by the change of body. So this is a really straightforward, basic, essentially vital verse, which is the beginning of spiritual understanding. This starts to put in, and it's in such a nice, simple way that Krishna is presenting it, that every one of us can understand when we sit and think about it, that I've passed in this body from childhood to youth, and hey, maybe old age is some way in the future, but it'll never happen to me, folks. No. It's coming. And similarly, even in this body, the body is passing through these different changes, but the soul is not. He's static, but the body is changing. And similarly, there's going to be a change of body at the time of death, which is a horrifying thought, and people don't want to talk about it. But actually, Krishna is starting his spiritual instruction by talking about it, by explaining that the soul changes his body. And this is actually what death is about. And someone who's actually sober, who's switched on, isn't disturbed by these disturbing situations. Someone who's actually realized, well, wait a minute, why is all this going on? Because, you know, it's actually, well, let's calm down, think about it clearly, act on the same platform, that, you know, I'm different from the body. So what is there to lament of? And Krishna's going to present this to Arjuna from so many different angles of vision so that he can know. Because this is actually the Kshatriya standard. Because after all these people, all these big tough guys are going to war and they're going to fight like anything. But on the understanding that even if my body gets killed, there's no big deal. Because if I'm a Kshatriya and I have to die in the fight, if I win, I'm going to become victorious, and that'll be really good. And even if I get a scar of war, I can show off my scars, you know, be a hero. And, you know, and, but if I die, it's no big deal, because I'll be elevated into a heavenly planet and get a higher species of life. So, although they were all fighting to the death, you know, with great enthusiasm and ferocity, and all valor and strength, courage and determination, still that the principle of the Kshatriya is to fight on that basis. That, you know, if I die and, you know, if I lose, there's no problem. And if I win, hey, that's pretty good. So, you know, this understanding, this background understanding of activity is really important to get the hang of. So, let's see if we can get the hang of this verse and try and learn it. As the, okay, Hare Krishna, Jaina.
Hare Krishna.
You're everything okay down there?
No, fine, thank you.
Okay, good, good, good. No children today?
They're playing outside.
Oh, okay. All right. So,
book.
One book. Here we go.
Thank you.
Page 76.
Thank you.
So we're just reading the translation to this verse. I'm sorry I'm sort of sidestepping a little bit, but I'm trying to break it down so that it becomes very, very solid and clear what we're actually talking about, rather than, okay, that's the verse, yeah, what's next? Yeah. So we really get to grips with it. Okay, so let's try this. As the embodied soul,
as the embodied soul,
continually passes,
continually passes
in this body,
in this body,
from boyhood to youth to old age,
from boyhood to youth to old age.
Similarly, the soul similarly passes into another body.
The soul similarly passes into another body.
At death. So Krishna is using that example. Similarly, tata, just in the same way. Yeah. The soul similarly passes into another body at death. So bolo, the soul similarly passes into another body at death.
The soul similarly passes into another body at death.
A sober person is not bewildered by such a change. Okay, so let's try it again. As the embodied soul continually passes,
in this body,
from boyhood to youth to old age, the soul similarly passes into another body.
A sober person is not bewildered by such a change.
Okay, let's try it one more time without looking at the verse. Okay. As the embodied soul continually passes,
in this body,
from childhood to youth to old age. The soul similarly passes into another body.
At death.
A sober person is not bewildered by such a change. Okay. So it's good to get the hang of this. Who'd like to repeat it now from memory?
As the embodied soul continually passes from this body,
to childhood, to youth, to old age,
similarly the soul passes into another body at death, a sober person is not bewildered by such a change.
Ah, very good. Okay, Milesh?
As the embodied soul continuously passes in this body from childhood to boyhood. From boyhood to youth to old age, the soul similarly passes into another body at death, a sober person is not bewildered by this change.
By such
a sober person is not bewildered by such a change.
Very good, very good. Okay, great. Okay, who's next?
I love a girl.
Okay, good.
As the embodied soul continuously passes in this body from boyhood to youth to old age, the soul similarly passes into another body at death. A sober person is not bewildered by such change.
Ah, very good, very good. Who's next?
Not me, okay then.
Fine. I'll start to memorize it.
All right. As the embodied soul...
Continue.
As the embodied soul continuously passes in this body from boyhood to youth to old age.
The soul
passes from...
Similarly.
Passes from
into
another body at death.
Mm.
A sober person is not bewildered by such a change.
Very good, very good. Okay. That's me.
A sober body continually passes from boyhood.
In this body.
Oh, sorry. In this body, passes from boyhood to youth to old age. He similarly passes to another body.
The soul similarly
passes to another body at death.
Mm.
A sober person is not bewildered by such a change.
Very good, very good. Would you like to?
I will try for.
Good.
As the embodied
soul.
As the embodied soul passes to another body.
Yeah, continually passes.
Continually passes to another body.
In this body.
In this body. From childhood to youth.
What comes after youth?
Old age.
Yeah, that's good. The soul.
From childhood to youth to old age.
Mm-hmm.
The soul similarly passes
into
another body to its death.
At death, yes.
Then I forgot another line.
A sober person is not bewildered. Yes, is not bewildered.
It's not bewildered
by such a change.
Yeah, very good. Okay, good. This is a really, really important verse for doing anything, especially for preaching. And you find that if you explain even this verse to people to help others understand, then it becomes immediately stronger and it just becomes natural. Hey, you know, what's the big deal? Why is everybody so bewildered? You know, why is everybody so gaga about this body? You know, why am I, and also particularly we can relate it not just to others, but also why am I so gaga about this body? What is keeping me stuck here in this consciousness? And, you know, the more we actually understand what is our real situation, and what is our forced situation, the more we actually start to develop the determination, well, I don't want to be stuck in this rotten consciousness of life. I actually want to get firmly onto the spiritual platform and stop being dragged down, just like the crabs in the bucket, you know. One of them tries to get out and the others just pull him back in, you know. And also, if we don't have enough determination to get out, then we never even make the break for getting out of the bucket. So we have to, you know, stop being crabby in this material world and actually get serious about being Krishna's devotees. Yeah. So, anyway, this is very good. So, okay, let's try the verse without looking all together. Okay, it makes it a little easy.
In English?
In English, yeah. Okay, and then we go for the Sanskrit. As the embodied soul
continually passes from this body, from boyhood to youth to old age,
The soul similarly passes into another body at death, so a person is not bewildered by such a change. Very good. Okay, great. Let's do the Sanskrit. Okay. Without looking. Dehinosmin yata dehe kumaram yovanam jara tata deham tara praptir dhiras tatra namuyati. Let's do it with looking.
Yes, 75. One more time.
Now all together without looking.
Dehinosmin yata dehe kumaram yovanam jara tatha deham taram praptir dhiras tatra namuyati.
One more time.
Dehinosmin yata dehe kumaram yovanam jara tatha deham taram praptir dhiras tatra namuyati.
Okay, now who's next without the book? Ashok, you want to do?
No, I can do the first line, not the second.
Go do the first line and we'll help you.
Dehinam smin yata dehe.
Dehinam smin yata dehe.
Yovanam
kumaram
yovanam jara.
Kumaram yovanam jara.
Tata dehe.
Deham tara. Tata deham tara.
Tata dehantara prapti.
The sober person, dhiras.
Dhiras tatra namuyati.
Yeah, good, good. Okay, who's next?
Dehinosmin yata dehe. Kumaram yovanam jara. Oh God.
Yes, he's speaking this verse. Tata.
Tata deham tara praptir.
Tata deham tara praptir.
Dhiras tatra namuyati.
Good. Okay, who's next?
Dehinosmin yata dehe.
Kumaram yovanam jara.
Tata deham tara praptir. Dhiras tatra namuyati.
You want to do, Jane?
I can.
Okay. Rashmi? Mira, who's going?
Dehinosmin yata dehe. Kumaram yovanam jara.
Tata deham tara praptir.
Dhiras tatra namuyati.
Very good. And Mira? Just try.
Dehinosmin yata dehe.
Kumaram yovanam
jara.
Kumaram yovanam jara.
Tata, similarly, tata
dehantara praptir.
A sober person,
dhiras tatra namuyati.
Hirastatranamuyate.
This is great. You two will be testing each other on the way back. Sanskrit and English. Yeah, it's really good. Do you want to have a try now, Jane?
Dehinos.
Smin.
Smin.
Yata.
Yet. No problem.
Okay, you have to test
I will
it.
I will learn.
Okay, use the book if you need to, but try to do it without.
Dehi no smin yata dahi.
Dehi no smin yata dehi.
Kumaram yavanam jara.
Kumaram yavanam jara.
Tatha dehantara praptir.
Tatha dehantara praptir.
Dhirashtatatra namamuyati.
Dhirashtatra namuyati.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, it just takes a little practice and then it's happening. So everyone can do it. It just takes some practice, that's all. And then it becomes possible. Okay, so this verse is very nice. Now we read a bunch of the purport last time. And let's this time... actually, let's quickly read through that and see. And then we'll come on to the second part of the paragraph. So... Rileshpur, would you like to read the first part of the purport for us, please?
Since every living entity is an individual soul.
Where are you reading?
Oh, I'm on the wrong. No, I'm on the right, aren't I?
213? Oh, sorry, yes, you're looking at the right part. Yeah, it's me who's looking at the wrong. Sorry.
Since every living entity is an individual soul, each is changing his body every moment, manifesting sometimes as a child, sometimes as a youth, and sometimes as an old man. Yet the same spirit soul is there and does not undergo any change. This individual soul finally changes the body at death and transmigrates to another body. And since it is sure to have another body in the next birth, either material or spiritual, there is no cause for lamentation by Arjuna on account of death, neither for Bhishma nor for Drona, for whom he was so much concerned. Rather, he should rejoice for their changing bodies from old to new ones, thereby rejuvenating their energy. Such changes of body account for varieties of enjoyment or suffering, according to one's work in life. So Bhishma and Drona, being noble souls, were surely going to have spiritual bodies in the next life, or at least life in heavenly bodies, for superior enjoyment of material existence. So in either case, there was no cause for lamentation.
Bit more?
Any man who has perfect knowledge of the constitution of the individual soul, the super soul, and nature, both material and spiritual, is called a dhira, or a most sober man. Such a man is never deluded by the change of bodies.
Okay, so any questions or comments so far?
I've got one question about...
Okay.
You know, when you lament over somebody dying, the theory is, what's the big deal? The soul is not dying.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm thinking, could you be lamenting because you know it's a soul and the soul may be going on to a worse situation?
Yeah, well, there's no use in lamenting. There's no use in crying over spilt milk. You know? It's spilt, so deal with it. What's the use in the lamentation?
Okay. I was thinking, is it possible for the soul to suffer? I know you can't destroy it, but can it suffer?
Well, the soul is actually by nature blissful. But if we become forgetful, actually the soul, as Krishna is going to explain, the jayate mriyate va, for the soul there is never birth nor death. And he's actually by nature, he's full of bliss and he's full of knowledge and he's eternal. So what is the question of suffering? But when he becomes situated in forgetfulness, when he's covered by ignorance, then he identifies with the body. And this identification with the body feels like suffering. Because the body, but what is the body? The body is a bag of chemicals. So, since when do chemicals have anxiety attacks? The person has anxiety attacks. But it's only the person who's in ignorance, who's identified with the body, that is having these panic attacks and anxiety attacks and depression and everything, simply because he's in ignorance that the soul himself, he is suffering because he's forgetful of his real nature. He's not in his real condition. He's in an artificial condition. Just like you take a fish. You take the fish out of water. I did this when I was a child. I was very foolish. I took a goldfish out of the fish tank and thought, well, what happens to the fish when he comes out of the... And, you know, he was flapping around on the floor. And I thought, oh my God, what do I do now? You know, I didn't have the intelligence to put him back in the water. But he was, you know, flapping around, gasping for air, because it wasn't his real condition of life. So in that condition, he's apparently suffering. And the suffering is very real. But what we're doing is we're coming into this material world and we're apparently suffering. Actually, we are in ignorance. That is definite. We are actually in ignorance. And in this ignorant condition, we're suffering. And it's very, very real. But it's a temporary state of affairs. It's not our permanent platform of existence. So this suffering is due to ignorance of our relationship with Krishna. Because what's the result? Everyone in this material world is a suffering situation. But the devotees, actually by virtue of changing their consciousness, become blissful even in this world full of suffering situations. Because their consciousness changes. They wake up their real consciousness and therefore they're blissful. Okay, so, you know, Arjuna, what's his situation? He's suffering because he's identifying with the body. And thinking, I can't fight, I can't do my duty, this is really a bad scene, Krishna help me. I need some guidance here, I don't know what to do. I'm bewildered. But when Krishna gives him spiritual knowledge, he's in the same situation, he's on the battlefield, he's fighting against his relatives and so many armies, but he's blissful and he's determined. He's situated in his real consciousness. So when someone's not in their real consciousness, they're suffering. So what do you do if you see someone suffering? Is if you can, you try to help them. So if Krishna's trying to help Arjuna, he's giving him the option. Arjuna, here's the knowledge by which you can get out of this ignorance. Now what are you going to do with it? Are you okay with this? Do you want me to explain it to you again? And Arjuna says, no, Karishye Vachanantava, now I'm ready to act according to your direction. So when someone's actually in knowledge, he acts on the spiritual platform. He acts on his real platform, which is the platform of freedom, liberation from material ignorance. Actually, liberation means to act on the spiritual platform. And that can be done even in this material conditioned world. But as long as I'm in the shackles of Maya, I'm forced to act in ignorance of my real identity. But when Krishna gives us the freedom to act in our spiritual consciousness, actually that's the platform of freedom, even while in the material world. That's the platform of happiness, blissfulness. And so the devotees see people suffering in the material world because of this ignorance. They're thinking, I'm the body, and acting, you know, acting out the whole drama and routine of life in ignorance. And so the devotees see that actually this is the platform of illusion, of nonsense, Maya, suffering, in forgetfulness of Krishna, and try to help that person get out of Maya and get out of the prison house of material activities in the material atmosphere and change their own personal atmosphere and of other people's atmospheres around them by reviving their Krishna consciousness. So the soul suffers in ignorance and forgetfulness, and so therefore the devotee tries to give them Krishna consciousness so they don't suffer. But the suffering is actually ignorance. Just like I give you an example on this. Supposing I go to a different country, and in France they all drive on the wrong side of the road. You know, it's just a natural thing. But the thing is, if you don't know the laws of the country and you think, well, I'm going to drive on the right side of the road, or in our case, the left side of the road, then you get arrested. And even if you say that, well, I didn't know that this is what you guys did over here, because I think you're driving on the wrong side of the road. I didn't know that actually you're supposed to drive on the wrong side of the road over here in France. Okay, fine. I'm sorry, I was ignorant. But does that mean you won't be arrested and punished because you didn't know? Ignorance is no excuse. You still suffer. Or supposing another example, you see a nice bright fire and you think, oh, that looks nice, I'd like to touch it. Does that mean you're not going to get burned because you didn't know that it was ignorant? That's why parents very carefully, when they're training their children, they say, look, this is flame, don't touch it. And they may very carefully take the child near the flame. Oh, so he actually gets the experience that this is actually dangerous and gets some knowledge, gets some realization of it. Because ignorance is no excuse. Just because you're ignorant doesn't mean you don't... doesn't mean you're excused from the suffering. But when you're ignorant, you act in all sorts of ways that do you harm and others. But when you're on the platform of knowledge, then you act in such a way that you don't cause harm to yourself. You follow the laws. You cooperate with the laws of the land. You cooperate with nature. You don't go sticking your hand in a fire. You don't go staring at the sun, because you know that the sun is really bright, and if I look at it directly, I'm going to burn out my eyeballs. You know? So you have to act in cooperation with the laws of the state and act in cooperation with the laws of nature. And that way, in knowledge, you steer a path through out of the suffering. And even on the platform of devotional life, as we become fixed in devotional life, even some problem comes. We take it stoically and philosophically that, okay, well, the body has to suffer. Yeah. I've got a cough. It's come. It will go. It's come, it will go. Okay. No big deal. Because by hearing this science of Krishna, Hari Bol.
Hari Bol.
Nice to see you both. Thank you for coming. By actually hearing about what is our real situation, just like the children when they go to school. When children go to school, they gradually, hopefully, learn so many things at school without even realizing it. You're learning so many things each day, and hopefully it's a good experience when you're actually learning so many things each day. You're learning, hopefully, something really useful that can improve your life. So by learning those useful things, you're actually making progress. And you're starting to be able to use that thing. Hey, guess what I learned in school today? I learned that you shouldn't leave the gas on in the kitchen, because if you do that and there's a spark, and once it gets to a critical mass, then the kitchen goes boom. You know, you've seen that experiment they do?
Yeah.
So what they do, they take a big tin with a lid on it and they put a hole in the lid and put the Bunsen burner tube in there and turn on the gas and they fill it up to a certain amount.
Yeah.
And then you leave the tin with the gas coming out, with the flame on the top, and when it gets to the critical level of the right mixture between gas and air, then boom, it all goes up. So you learn by practical experience why you don't leave the gas on in the kitchen. Because otherwise, boom, your house goes up. Yeah. So you learn useful things. You learn how to not get into problems. Yeah. So Krishna's teaching in Bhagavad Gita, the spiritual science, is to teach us how to not suffer in this material world. The spiritual science of how to be fixed in our Krishna consciousness so that we're not suffering in the material existence. So your question, does the soul suffer? He suffers when he's in ignorance. And this is why we're also like children learning about Krishna. We're learning step by step the science of Krishna so that we don't have to suffer. This is why Krishna is speaking Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna, so that we don't have to suffer. And as we learn this knowledge and put it into practice, oh yeah, that's pretty good. It makes sense. Yeah. Okie doke. Any other comments or questions?
Yeah, I was thinking if the soul already suffers here anyway in the body,
yeah,
but according to the Srimad Bhagavatam, according to your deeds, you go to hell and you suffer more. What's the point of that, suffering double?
Indeed. Why do it? Better stop doing it. Yes. So someone who gets some intelligence, that why am I just suffering worse and worse like this? Better stop doing it. The definition of a crazy person is he keeps doing those things that make him suffer. So better we become sane and stop being crazy and suffering in this material world. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Any other points? We can move on. Okay. Then, Mira, would you like to read this carefully, gently, this next paragraph, the Mayavadi theory, please?
The Mayavadi theory of oneness of the spirit soul cannot be entertained on the ground that the spirit soul cannot be cut into pieces as a fragmental portion. Such cutting into different individual souls would make the supreme
cleavable
or changeable against the principle of the supreme souls being unchangeable. As confirmed in the Gita, the fragmental portions of the Supreme exist eternally, sanatan, and are called
shara.
That is, they have a tendency to fall down into material nature. These fragmental portions are eternally so, and even after liberation, the individual soul remains the same, fragmental. But once liberated, he lives an eternal life in bliss and knowledge with the personality of Godhead. The theory of reflection can be applied to the supersoul, who is present in each and every individual body and is known as the Paramatma. He is different from the individual living entity. When the sky is reflected in water, the reflections represent both the sun and the moon and the stars also. The stars can be compared to the living entities and the sun or the moon to the Supreme Lord. The individual fragmental spirit soul is represented by Arjuna and the Supreme Soul is the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna. They are not on the same level, as it will be apparent in the beginning of the fourth chapter. If Arjuna is on the same level with Krishna and Krishna is not superior to Arjuna, then their relationship of instructor and instructed becomes meaningless. If both of them are deluded by the illusory energy, Maya, then there is no need of one being the instructor and the other the instructed. Such instruction would be useless because in the clutches of Maya, no one can be an authoritative instructor. Under the circumstances, it is admitted that Lord Krishna is the Supreme Lord, superior in position to the living entity Arjuna, who is a forgetful soul deluded by Maya.
Mm. Okay, so any questions or comments on this paragraph? Because it's kind of a bit deep philosophy and it's worth trying to understand it. What do we mean when we say the theory of reflection? What can we understand by the theory of reflection? just like the sun is reflected in so many stars in the sky, or the moon is reflected in so many stars in the sky. So there's a reflection. So the idea being that it's not that the souls are cut up into pieces. You can take your chapati and you can cut it up into little pieces and they become bits of a chapati. Yeah? Is that alright? But with the soul, you can't cut it into pieces. You know, you cleave it. You know what they may say, a cleaver, a meat cleaver? What they do in the butcher's shops, they have these big things, and they cut it into pieces. But the soul is uncleavable. You can't cut it up into different pieces. It's eternally individual. The material nature, you can take a piece of wood and you can cut it into pieces. Or the surgeon, he takes a scalpel and he cuts pieces off your body if they're diseased and damaged and they're irreparable. Yeah. But the soul can't be cut into pieces. So the principle, what Krishna is saying in Bhagavad Gita, as we're going to see in this verse also, in this chapter, is that the soul can't be cut into pieces by any weapon. He's eternally the same. So that means that the individual souls, although they're parts of Krishna, are eternally parts of Krishna. And Krishna is eternally Krishna. He doesn't get cut up into little pieces. Krishna is eternally Krishna, and we're all eternally jiva souls. So, just like the sunlight is reflected in the stars, so the stars, they also reflect a tiny little bit of light in the sky. So we also reflect a tiny little bit of Krishna's wonderful qualities. Krishna is the supreme person, and we're all tiny little persons. Because if you look in the stars, in the sky at night, when it's a clear sky, if there's, you can try this experiment sometime. When there's no moon visible, and there's just the stars in the sky, well, you can see the stars, but you can't see much else, because it doesn't really give much light. The stars on their own don't give that much light. But when the moon comes up in the sky, then there's lots of light everywhere. So Krishna's presence illuminates everything. But just the reflection of the tiny little stars doesn't give much benefit. So in other words, I'm just trying to give an example to help us understand that our illuminating capacity, our brightness, is very nice and bright, those twinkle, twinkle little stars in the sky, but, and they're shining from, you know, they can see them from millions and millions of miles away, so they must be pretty bright. But their light is simply reflecting the light back from Krishna. But when Krishna's light, the light of the sun or the moon, but when Krishna's light illuminates the world, when the sun or the moon comes up, the world becomes a very bright place. So Krishna's potency is there. But the principle is we're very tiny individuals. Now, what's being discussed, and Krishna is very great, now what's being discussed here is that the Mayavadi theory of oneness is a very important thing to understand. The Mayavadis, they say that because the living entity is in ignorance, he's forgotten that he's God. You know, and now he's forgotten that he's God. You know, he's appears to be separate from him. But if God is the supreme being, how can he become bewildered by ignorance? How can God become ignorance? That means ignorance is greater than God. It means ignorance has got God under its control. That means ignorance is God. That doesn't quite make sense somehow. But rather what we do find is that this ignorance, this Maya, is just one of Krishna's energies. It's called his deluding energy. It's just like the curtain. You know, you cover everything with a curtain and then you just can't see what's underneath the curtain anymore. Just like now, we talked about how the body is covering over the soul. And you can't see that it's the soul anymore. Because it's covered by the curtain of Krishna's deluding energy. And this is why we can't see the soul, because we're all covered by this Maya, this curtain of Krishna's Maya. Yeah. Just like if I take a big curtain and throw it over you all, then you won't be able to see who's who and tells what's what anymore. Yeah? But if the curtain is removed, then it becomes very clear. So similarly, when we become free from the curtain, when Krishna draws the curtains and the curtains open and you see, this is actually the situation, then we start to see everything properly and see it clearly in perspective. So the process of beginning to see, actually, it begins with the ears, actually. It doesn't begin with the eyes. It begins with the ears. If we want to understand what's actually going on in the world, we have to learn to see with the ears. Just like at school, the teacher, he may show you so many things, but he probably talks quite a lot. Does he? Yeah. Teacher talk. He has to talk because he's enabling us to understand so many things by listening and giving examples so that we can understand what's going on. So the Mayavadis, they are under this impression that we're all one and that God, we just don't realize that we're God. This is the foolishness. But how can God be controlled by illusion? That means illusion is God and we should worship illusion because that's the supreme. It's greater than God. But no, we understand very clearly that illusion, the power of illusion is Krishna's potency. It belongs to Krishna, it's used by Krishna, and it's working under Krishna's control. Just like, let me give you another example. Suppose you were in the prison, and the Prime Minister walks in through the door to come and see how you're getting on. Does that mean the Prime Minister has gone to jail? No. He's come, but he's not under the laws of the jail, because the jail is working under the control of the government, and the government is run by the Prime Minister. So Krishna, when he comes into this material world, foolish people, they think, Krishna's in, he's like in a material body just like us. He's come in the material world, he's a conditioned soul. But someone who knows what's Krishna's position knows that Krishna, when he comes into this material world, he's not under the control of this material world. Because Krishna's explained in the Bhagavad Gita, this material world, mayadya kshena prakriti suyate sacharachara. This material nature, Krishna says, is working under my direction. So this material nature is very bewildering. But we have to know from what Krishna is saying in Bhagavad Gita that it's working under his control. Because if Krishna is one of the prisoners just coming up with his own philosophy of life, then Bhagavad Gita isn't very important. You know, if the prisoners are all discussing about themselves, you know how people do sometimes? They solve all the problems of the world by having a good discussion about it. But hey, guess what? In spite of solving all the problems of the world, we should do this, and the government should do that, and everybody should do this, and everything will be fine. Yeah. In spite of that, although we've talked so much, the problems are still there. We haven't actually talked our way out of the problems. But, and in the same way, if one of the conditioned souls is trying to explain the problems of the material world, and explain the problems, how to get out of it, then it also has no value. Unless Krishna is actually free from the problems of the material world, then Bhagavad Gita is as good as you or I speaking. But clearly Bhagavad Gita has got something very, very powerful and wonderful, because Krishna is not like one of us. Krishna never becomes a foolish prisoner within the material world. He never becomes a conditioned soul. And similarly, the conditioned soul never becomes Krishna. The individual soul never becomes God. Neither God ever becomes a prisoner. The jiva is, we're all eternally individual jivas, and Krishna is eternally the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So these things need to be carefully understood. Any questions or comments about that? And the thing is that what's Krishna doing? He's speaking Bhagavad Gita in such a way that, look, this is my life. I'm eternal and blissful and full of knowledge. And you are also meant for coming and living with me in the spiritual world, in eternal life and full of bliss and knowledge. Krishna's coming into the prison house not to show us, well, look, I'm just one of you guys. You know, he may be playing like one of us, but actually, when we become aware of what Krishna is doing, then we see, hey, wait a minute, you know, this prisoner, he's lifting up Govardhan Hill for a week with his little finger, without even batting an eyelid, and having wonderful fun while he's doing it, and having nice interactions with all his friends. You know? And at the same time, one of the big, big prison wardens, Indra, who's absolutely steaming with fury, is trying his best to smash Krishna and all his friends and all his cows just with his little finger. He's flicking in the side and saying, well, tough luck, Indra. I'm the boss. So just with Krishna's little finger, he's defeating all the rage of this big, big prison warden. Because even sometimes the prison wardens, they think, well, we're the bosses in the prison. And they forget that actually there's the head of the government. So and that means even the prison wardens are subject to becoming illusioned. Even the demigods are subject to becoming illusioned by the material world, because they're also jivas. They've been promoted to a high position. Someone's promoted to the position of an advanced human being. Someone's promoted to the position of being a government minister. Someone's promoted to the position of being a demigod. But he's just a little guy like all the rest of them. And you know what happens if you get a big, big position? Well, we see it with Indra. He's become big crazy. You start doing all these really stupid things and getting really puffed up and, you know, making a fool of yourself. And although you're thinking, yeah, you follow my order, you know, you're just thinking, this guy's a joke. So this is what happens. This is the influence of Krishna's material energy. When we try to take on the roles of being a big, big person within this material world, when we become puffed up with our power and prestige, we become even more foolish, actually. So that's why Krishna puts devotees in the roles of demigods, because they're a bit more qualified to be able to handle that position, because they can not forget so easily what little nonsenses we are. And Indra, he actually does us all a favor by, you know, being Mr. Stupid when it comes to all these things, and doing all the stupid things that we have to realize, oh gosh, I'm glad I didn't make a fool of myself like that and have everybody laughing at me for the rest of the time in the material world. You know, he's doing us actually a big favor by taking on that role. But still, Krishna's very kind to him. And he again reinstates him back in his position. Now calm down, Indra. You should remember that I'm always the supreme controller and you're always my servant. And not just you, but all the demigods, they're also my servants. So now please go and do your service. And again and again and again, Krishna sorts him out and kind of brings him back with a reality check. Oh yes, okay. Hare Krishna. Yeah. So it's very difficult when we become puffed up by this material world, because it's very, very strong and very, very bewildering. So even the demigods are bewildered by what's going on. And the bigger demigods, they're even more bewildered. And you see people like Lord Brahma, who's the chief of all the demigods. Even he gets bewildered. Even he thinks, well, I'll put Krishna through his paces. I'll steal away all his calves and cowherd boys and see what he does. You know. And then he realized, wait a minute, I'm playing with fire. He's my boss. Yeah. So it's a very bewildering world. So this is why we need to hear, and rather than try to be in positions where we become very proud or very expert and wonderful, rather try to keep ourselves Trinadapi Sunichena, Tarorapi Sahishnana, Amanina Manadena, Kirtaniya Sadahari. Because when we think, just like Indra, he set this nice example, he forgot who Krishna was, and he's thinking, how dare this Krishna behave in this way, thinking he's all in all. I am the powerful one. And he's chanting, Indra, Indra, you demand, you give respect to Indra. You know, he's chanting his holy name. But actually we have to learn to chant Krishna's holy name. And that requires becoming humble. Trinadapi Sunichena, Tarorapi Sahishnana, Amanina Manadena, Kirtaniya Sadahari. Lord Chaitanya gave us this to help us. So if we remember this, this is another really, really important shloka to learn. You won't find it directly in the Bhagavad Gita, but it encapsulates the whole philosophy of Bhagavad Gita. Where Krishna says, our Lord Chaitanya, he teaches us, one should chant the holy name of the Lord in a humble state of mind, thinking oneself lower than the straw in the street. One should be more tolerant than a tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige, and ready to offer all respects to others. And in such a state of mind, one can chant the holy name of the Lord constantly. So this being able to be constantly conscious of Krishna and chanting his holy name is the philosophy that Krishna is giving to Arjuna to actually be able to act on the platform of freedom, as opposed to the platform of bewilderment and suffering. And that's why Arjuna has gone to Krishna and said, now you please instruct me. Tell me clearly what's best for me, because I just don't know anymore. Please instruct me. Now I'm a soul surrendered to you. So, Chaitanya Nitai Prabhu, would you like to comment or present some things? Because I'm sorry I've been...
No, it's okay. You've covered most what I was going to say.
Really?
Yeah, definitely. Okay. Especially about the prison.
Hmm.
About that. So, thank you. Yes, you've covered.
Okay.
Most of it.
Durga.
Durga, yes.
Yeah, Durga. And what are the meanings of Durga? Because this is Durga.
Superintendent.
It means prison.
Prison, yes.
Yeah.
Hmm.
This is the prison house. This is Durga Dham. This is the prison world. Yeah, is the abode where the prisoners live, under the control of Durga, and she doesn't let us out of her clutches, just like that. Any other points? You said most of it, so what did
actually, I don't know where I read somewhere where it's describing, even in the prison house, just like in this material world, you know, there are different grades of prison. So just like in this material world, we may live, somebody might be living in opulence, but they're still under prison, under the modes of under Maya, and also they might be in prison. Somebody might not be able to like go out if they've committed such a bad sin, crime. Then they're in a lower grade of prison, where they're just bound to high security security cell.
Yeah.
So it's a
or solitary.
Solitary, yeah. So it's also, you know, just like in this material world, you can see somebody might be living in opulence, you know, palaces and things like this. Somebody might be living in a hut or so, or something, but it's a different. No, you
somebody may be doing chapatis
and sabji. Somebody
may be doing porridge.
Porridge. So a different type of, similar to prison, so that's a good example. In material world,
yeah.
So, but you see, what we don't understand, that we are bound by like Durga, Maya,
Yeah.
We are under the influence of Maya.
Yeah.
In the three modes of material, you know, goodness, passion, and ignorance, and that's how we're all acting in that state of in that state of mind. And you know, like this verse is as we go further, it helps us to, you know, get out of this entanglement and you know, sort of go back to Krishna in a gradual process.
Yeah, remember Prabhupada, he gave the example of Gandhi, that Gandhi was like a first-class prisoner, although he was in the British prison. He was able to cook and he was able to study. But he's still within the prison. So some people have better facilities than maybe first, second class, third class, fourth class prisoners, fifth class prisoners. But
we're still in prison.
Still in prison. And in that sense, we're all in the same boat. Mira.
What do you have to do to get out of prison then?
What do you have to do to get out of prison? Will you tell me what you have to do to get out of prison? Why do people keep coming, even when they're let out of prison, why do they keep coming back to prison?
Reoffending?
Yeah. Because they haven't changed the mentality. They still have the offensive. Offending is the point. They still have the offensive mentality that I'm going to be Krishna. I'm going to be the enjoyer of the world. And so they come back for another term, and another term, and another term. Repeated birth and death. Another prison term. This term you've got wrapped up in the body of a frog. Next in the body of a fish, or a mosquito, or a bird, or a human being, or a demigod. But either way, it's another term in another engagement. Encaged and entrapped in the bodily concept of life without the freedom, the natural freedom to be able to serve Krishna. So when we get the freedom to serve Krishna by being engaged in devotional service, this is actually the platform of freedom. So what we have to do is become clear about who is Krishna. What is the relationship between ourselves and Krishna? This is called Krishna consciousness. And once we know the relationship, when we actually demonstrate that we're very serious, not just to make a show of devotional service, but actually be engaged in Krishna's service, then we can be let out of the material world. We can go home. When we're actually determined that my only business is to serve Krishna, then we go home. Yeah? But if we're, you know, still got some, I'll be a devotee, but I still got a few things I want to do. You know, okay, well, you stay in the material world until you've finished doing what you want to do. Yeah. But that's the principle. When we become purified of all this material contamination, of our consciousness being contaminated by material idea, material sense of material identity. As long as I have a material conception of who I am and what I am and what I'm supposed to do, then we're within the prison house of the material world. When we give up all these material conceptions and become fixed in our original consciousness as eternal servants of Krishna, then there's no more reason to stay in the material world. So why do saints and sages come back to this material world? They come back to preach out of a sense of what can I do that will please Krishna by helping others come back home. So even though they're in the material world, just like MI5, MI6, 007, you know, whatever it may be, they're acting, but they're not under the laws of the material world because they're acting under the law, directly under the control of the government. So they're not bound by the laws that others abound by. Those who are actually the confidential servants doing the government's business, then that's a very secret state of affairs, because who can understand what they're actually doing? But those who are also aware what is the government's real business, they are not bewildered by this, and they also are engaged on that platform of freedom even within the realm of the prison house. They're on the platform of loving service to Krishna. And so they're not bound in the same way by the laws of the material world. They still act with a view to acting in such a way to teach others how to act, but they're not, although they may appear like everyone else, you know, but actually they're not bound by the laws of the prison because they're acting in full consciousness of who they are, that they're government servants, they're Krishna's servants. They're acting under the orders of the king. And this is Arjuna's thing. Now, Karishye Vachanantava, now my dear Krishna, I'm ready to act according to your direction. I'm ready to fight according to your direction. So Arjuna, although he's acting very enthusiastically, like everybody's acting, the mode of passion, enthusiastically, very good activities or very ignorant activities with whatever enthusiasm or qualities they have. Arjuna, he's acting with all enthusiasm and qualities, but he's not bound up in the material world. He's fully linked with Krishna. He's doing Krishna's service. And Krishna's given the clue at the end of Bhagavad Gita of what it is that will actually please him. So if I'm a servant, if I'm your servant, my duty is to please you. If I'm an employee in the firm, what is my duty? Shocking though it may sound in today's day and age, if I'm an employee in the firm, my duty is to please my boss. End of period, end of story. And if I satisfy my boss, if he's satisfied by my activities, then I'm a success and I get promoted. And if other people aren't satisfied, then that's tough. Because if the boss is satisfied, then that's what counts. And the duty of anyone working in an establishment is to please the head of the establishment. So the devotees, when they know my business is to satisfy Krishna, and Krishna is giving the hint at the end of Bhagavad Gita, what is it that's going to satisfy me? So what does he say? What is it that's going to please Krishna? He's giving his hints all the way through Bhagavad Gita.
Surrender unto me. Therefore,
yeah.
Varieties of religion.
Yeah. Just sarva dharma paricca, just give it up and surrender to me. Yeah. Don't worry about your position, your prestige, your this and that, your salary, your pension, your superannuation, the whole thing. Just surrender to me.
I'll protect you.
And I'll protect you. No problem. And he's advising how to do it. Manmana bhavamad bhakta madhyaji mam namaskaru. Always engage your mind in thinking of me. You become my devotee. You worship me. You offer your obeisances to me. So having done this and come to the platform of surrender, Krishna said, okay, now this is what I really want you to do. One who explains this confidential secret of devotional service to the devotees, this really gets me. This is really what I want. And for that person, he's so dear to me that pure devotional service is guaranteed. And he's so dear to me, there's no one as dear to me as this servant in the whole world. And at the end he comes back to me. So this is the process for going back home, back to Godhead, is to please Krishna, to try to see, what does Krishna want me to do? How can I do what Krishna wants? So we become engaged in doing what Krishna wants, and Krishna sees, oh, okay, this is a good one. Come on. Come back. Come home. And the devotee becomes actually a pure devotee. He's so blissful in his trying to serve Krishna, he's not even interested in going back, because his only interest actually comes to the platform of, I just want to please Krishna. I just want to serve Krishna. And even going back is insignificant. As long as I'm pleasing Krishna, I'm on the platform of transcendental bliss. But Krishna still, he takes the devotees home. Okay, you come back and you live with me and we'll play together. So this is the process. Does that answer your question, Mary? Okay. Alright, shall we call it a halt for tonight? What time is it? Oh, it's 7:30. Alright. Thank you all very, very much.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
Shishi Gaur Nitai ki
jai.
Shri Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Maharani ki
jai.
Nitai Gaur Hari Gaur.
Shri Tibhagavan Prabhu ki
jai. Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
Namam Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pustamuji today, Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami today. Namaste Saraswati Devi, Gauravani Pachari, Nivisesha Sunyavadi Pasti Jade Shikha. Hari Hari. Okay, good. So there's a few more things we need to finish discussing in our
last.